I guess I'm a futurist. I think that, you know, considering where we want to be in the future is a great way to reflect on what we need in the present and what sort of important work needs to be done in the technology and sustainability space. And I guess, you know, growing up having a lot of different interests, something that I always felt really resonated with me was Star Trek and sci-fi, and seeing not only how technology and engineering advances potentially in the future and what that looks like, but imagining the future of ethics and the future of communities and how we interact with different cultures in a very socially different way.
Hi, Smart Community friends. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a fascinating talk with Jess Coldry about how art can shape the future of smart communities. Jess is a human geographer and creative technology artist, and through her work aims to harness the underutilized potential of infrastructure to address social and environmental needs. Jess tells us about her varied and interesting background, as well as her studies in visual art and human geography. She also tells us about her current work and latest venture heading to England to study humanitarian engineering before telling us about her passion for futurism and how societies progress in socially different ways. Jess then discusses how her work fits into the smart community space and how she has used her creative and collaborative skills in past projects to bring in new ways of thinking and ideas. She also discusses how her training has helped to give her a different perspective and what a smart community is to her. Jess then shares with us some of the projects she's been working on, as well as some of her achievements, before we discuss how art can trigger emotional responses, allowing people to think differently and boldly about the future of communities. We also talk about how art galleries and libraries could potentially be the hub of communities and the value that that could bring to our communities. We finish our chat discussing the emerging trends of the post-COVID world and the different requirements communities will need in the future. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Jess. How are you today?
Hi, I'm well, thanks, Zoe. How are you?
I am so good, and I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. So let's just jump straight in. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an artist, a creative technology artist, and a human geographer working in the engineering sector. So maybe to explain a little bit about what those things actually mean, I might tell you about my studies. So I've just finished up at Monash University. I studied a Bachelor of Visual Arts and a Bachelor of Arts in Human Geo. And Human Geo is quite a humanities-focused form of geography, looking at global challenges through the lens of economics, policy, management studies, and science. So it's quite an interesting multidisciplinary field. And particularly interested in the sustainability elements of that. And in the visual arts area, I was really interested in looking at sculpture and coding, 3D printing and electronics through my work. So being a creative technology artist, I'm someone who loves to explore how technology and society interact and expressing that, through interactive artworks and things that catch people's eyes in a new way. So having that interest in technology, art, and sustainability at the same time, I've had the chance to have a lot of really interesting, fun experiences while studying. So starting off at the Australian Road Research Board, I got to do some work looking into recycled plastic in the road sector, which was really rewarding and great to get to bring together a lot of stakeholders in that space. And I've gone from that to working in rail, in infrastructure consulting, and recently to starting off in the chief engineer of Victoria's office, which has been a really interesting experience so far. And yeah, really interested in the engineering sector and how different perspectives and multidisciplinary approaches can help shape the future of that space. And so about to move over to England with the support of the General Sir John Monash Foundation to study humanitarian engineering, which is an exciting new field that I guess crosses over some of those elements existing already, and really interested to see what's been done in that space as well.
Yeah, cool. Well, it sounds like you've got a really interesting and varied background, and you've been able to work in some really cool sectors and potentially bring this very different lens to those as well, which is really exciting, and which is one of the reasons I really wanted to get you on the podcast. I've been following you along on LinkedIn and some of the cool stuff you're doing. Now, we will talk about that. We'll get to that. But let's zoom back a little bit. And can you tell us firstly what you're passionate about and then how that fits into the smart community space?
I guess if I had to sum up all of those passions in like one word, I'd say, I'm a futurist. I think that, you know, considering where we want to be in the future is a great way to reflect on what we need in the present and what sort of important work needs to be done in the technology and sustainability space. And I guess, you know, growing up having a lot of different interests, something that I always felt really resonated with me was Star Trek and sci-fi, and seeing not only, I guess, how technology and engineering advances, you know, potentially in the future and what that looks like, but imagining the future of ethics and the future of communities and how we interact with different cultures in a very socially different way. And I think that sense of progressing as societies and as cultures, not just as technological, you know, capable people. Yeah, that's a real passion of mine. And I guess it leads me in my artwork and my work in the sustainability space as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. And I think that bringing all those things together must make your days fairly interesting. Like, I think about it sounds like you've been able to pursue, you know, you had a lot of interest and now you've been able to pursue those in different ways. When we talk about smart communities, you know, it's all about that multidisciplinary approach. And, you know, bringing in that creative side and bringing in the rail and the infrastructure and those type of things. Now, when you've been working in these, you know, these spaces, what is it that you think, I guess, that different perspective that you, you know, that maybe you were able to, you know, watch people kind of open up and go, oh, that's a different way to think about things. Is there any examples where you can really show, like, you know, you take a traditional project and maybe you've added some little bit of creativity there, or just a little bit of a different way of thinking about things?
Yeah, sure. So that first experience at the Australian Road Research Board, I think I was quite nervous starting off as the first humanities person to, I guess, work as an intern in that context. It was a bit hard thinking at first, you know, where some of those more socially focused perspectives might fit in. But through that project, looking at how recycled plastics can be reused in the road sector, I found it really interesting to take the approach of what are the communications and policy breakdowns that have led to some of the fragmentation in the field. And, you know, in terms of all the work that was being done, there was, I guess, a bit of duplication of effort and people weren't necessarily building the relationships that were needed for the field to move forward. So I guess starting off there, I was tasked with writing a literature review of, you know, the technical studies that had been done in the field. But I really felt that it was more of a, I wouldn't say a people problem, but there was like a really big human element of it that wasn't being addressed. And so rather than just, you know, working in the lab and reading for the whole summer, I decided to get out, travel around Victoria, go into recycling centres, asphalt plants, talk to people in different levels of government. And through that, I guess I got a really different insight into some of the key barriers and the opportunities for collaboration that weren't being progressed just because, I guess, no one had really had the opportunity to bring all these people into a room together and talk some of these issues through. So that was exactly what I decided to do. I brought all the stakeholders together at the National Transport Research Centre and ran a workshop. And I think sometimes it's not just the technical information that's needed to introduce, you know, new technological innovations and new sustainable materials. It's often that bridging the gap between what's already been done, the efforts and the energy that's already going into solving these problems, and just uniting that in a new way or reframing it so that people can work together in a more productive and collaborative way. I think that's, yeah, really the value of the humanities in this space, and something I've tried to carry forward. And obviously, I guess, hosting the podcast, you'd know that conversations are such an integral part of introducing these smart cities, smart community concepts, and bringing people into a room together is often, you know, it has so many more benefits than you'd imagine.
Yeah, that's so true. And as you were talking there, it's something that is such an important part of smart communities. It's, and, you know, drawing parallels there, it's not about the technology and, you know, finding and explaining, you know, the deep technical, whatever elements of how this technology works and that type of thing. Those things are important, but people know those things, and what we need to do is be able to communicate, you know, the outcomes or the implications and how we're going to address those and what problem it's actually trying to solve. But at the end of the day, projects don't fail. I don't want to even say fail, but projects don't work as well as they could, or that, you know, that fragmentation that you were talking about, that doesn't happen because of a technology thing. It happens because of a people thing, right? And so majority of the time, it's not the technology that's causing an issue, or that it's not possible, or whatever. It's that it's not possible in our minds yet, right? And potentially the technology is not quite where it needs to be, but if we can actually get people along the journey, then we can focus in on it more, and maybe it's not what we thought it was, it's actually something else, or maybe it's part of this, you know, we need this technology plus this data plus this other piece of technology plus this communication protocol plus whatever else it is. And so I think that's so important, and something that seems, when you say it like this, it seems fairly obvious, right? But it's unbelievable how it causes issues all around the world in all different, you know, spheres, in levels of government, in, you know, your community, your local community groups, in organizations, you know, private sector, et cetera, et cetera. It's not such an important piece. And that multidisciplinary approach, it's not just about having engineers and planners and technology people, but actually that human side and people that really understand what it is that drives us as humans and then can make those connections as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, artists have this really interesting training where it's all about, you know, before you make anything in art school, it's all about learning to see, you know, rather than learning how to draw a chair, for example, you know, the measurements, the lines, you learn about how to see what's actually there rather than what you think a chair is meant to look like. You know, there's this kind of story of, you know, you think in your mind logically that all the legs of the chair are the same length. And often when people draw a chair, that's one of the first things they'll put down on paper. But, you know, depending on the perspective, legs are going to be in different positions, they're going to be different lengths, they're not going to look how they should look logically. And learning how to see issues, I guess, for what they are, being able to represent that and share that with other people in a way that is, they can interpret, they can use as their own reference for reality. I think that's something artists do really well, and a skill that's probably not recognized as much as it could be for the way it can actually help drive real change and help people move forward on important issues.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, we're going to talk more about art and you, but I want to just go broad before I forget. What is a smart community to you?
When I imagine a smart community, I think not only of, you know, people being connected in terms of livability and data, and I guess some of those things that are commonly thought of in smart communities, but I think a smart city or smart community is a meaningfully connected community. So a place that's inclusive, accessible for everyone, and that has a really kind of flexible, squishy feeling where, you know, it can change uses depending on demographics, and it can adjust and flux. And I imagine a smart community as a very creative, kind of agile green space. And to me, I guess it's quite a visual concept. Like I think of, you know, the designs of Le Corbusier or sci-fi. And I guess that image to me of the smart city is very future focused. And it, you know, it seems like a place of boundless innovation, and not just in terms of technology, but in that cultural ethics sides that we were talking about a bit before.
Yes, I love flexible and squishy. That has never been, well, flexible, yes, but squishy has never been said on this podcast before. And I just love it to think that, and that it can adapt and change, right, depending on the demographics. I think that's such a, for me, I guess a visual, but also like something that squishy is the only way to articulate it, right? That you can, it moves and it shifts and it changes, and it's not a fixed thing, because what might be smart for one person is not for another person, and what might work or make someone's life better in this community actually makes it worse in this other community. So being able to shift and change and use those tools, I would use, you know, the technology, the data, but also the connection, and use them as these things that we can leverage as we need them, but also some things that they won't suit me, so I don't need to engage with them at all, I think is really key. And the visual element as well is something I think it's from an artist's perspective too. It's like being able to actually visualize this future of our communities in a way that then can really, I guess, ignite something within us to be able to shift and change and do something differently, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I kind of believe, you know, before we create future, the first thing you have to do is imagine it and visualize it. And that's true for a lot of things in life. But I think having that visual reference of where we want to be and what it looks like and what are the adjectives, what does it feel like, is a really good way to kind of set that direction and that focus as well.
And like you were saying before with the chair, if we just go and go, oh, well, I know that a chair has four legs and they're all the same length. When you're drawing a chair, it's not going to, that's not necessarily going to be the best solution, right? Because we put them down before we've even decided, you know, well, where is the chair? What type of chair is it going to be? What needs does it need to meet? Who's going to be sitting in the chair? Or is it going to be a rocking chair? Is it going to be a park bench? Is it going to be, you know, whatever it's going to be? Maybe it is it might be different things to different people. Maybe there's a couple of sides to this chair and I can see this side, you can see that side, whatever the case may be. When we start putting the legs down, then we go, oh, okay, well, let's try and make it work. Oh, maybe it's just a line then. Okay, there's a chair. But it's not what we, or if we don't step back and start thinking about those things in a way that's like, well, what is this trying to solve, or what am I trying to achieve here, then we won't get the outcomes that we want, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, let's talk about you. I'm not an artist actually at all, so I'm keen to hear your point of view around this. So tell us about, I guess, some of the projects and things that you've been working on recently in this space, and tell us about some of your achievements recently, which is really exciting.
Oh, thanks, Zoe. So I really enjoyed, I was actually lucky between the lockdowns here in Melbourne to get to go ahead with it, but I recently did an art technology residency at Yarra Rangers Tech School in the Yarra Valley here in Victoria, and that was just, you know, an incredible experience. They had just the most cutting edge hub of technology in this very regional space. But they had like 20 3D printers, laser cutters, a few dozen different drones, some of them the size of a small car. They had this beautiful universal mechanical arm, which I worked with a lot during my art residency there. And I guess what I wanted to do through my work during that period in the studio there was to really consider how people relate to technology in an emotional way. And not just in the sense that we're too addicted to our phones, or, you know, technology is evil or bad, or robots are going to take over, which I feel like dominates a lot of artwork about technology. But I wanted to, I guess, consider what technology actually means to us and what that relationship could look like in the future. And the way I did that was by drawing on the space age futurism and the space mod fashion designs of the 1960s when people first traveled to the moon. And there was this, you know, influx of creative energy where people were thinking 100, 200 years in the future, if people are living on the moon, what would they be wearing? You know, how would they take their pets for a walk? What type of hats would they wear if they were on the moon and they weren't, you know, living on Earth? And just this kind of like energy and this boundless, I guess, sense of moving out of what was in the current moment, but based on the values of the current moment, where could we be? And I think it was really interesting seeing how a lot of the designs were very androgynous. They could be worn by men and women, and the, you know, perception at the time with all the social movements that gender would be perceived quite differently in the future, which came through in that artwork, I thought was very interesting. So I guess there's that positive future thinking element, but there's also the predictions that go wrong, like the flying cars or in the Jetsons when they had this like little maid in a cartoon who looked like a, you know, human robot android who wore a little apron and used a little, you know, broom and shovel after to clean up when people made a mess. I mean, they're not really things that came true, and it's quite funny to look back and think, you know, some of it was right, some of it was wrong, and just the emotionality behind that. So I used a lot of references to the 1960s and that style of creativity and design, and brought that together with, you can say, kind of future technology. So the robotic arms as they're looking at accelerating automation, drones as well, looking at surveillance and their use in the military and all the fear around that. And I brought them into a domestic context, looking at, you know, what could those interactions be like if your drone was actually a pet that you cared for and took out for walks, or if a mechanical arm was actually a companion that helped you get ready in the morning and wanted you to feel good about yourself. And just these little, I guess, snapshot experiments into emotion and connection was really what I was going for. And so I programmed the mechanical arm, and I took photography series, and that was a really exciting way just to play and, I guess, to create that absurd but fun creative space where people could think about what their emotional relationships with technology currently were and where, I guess, they would want them to go if you could have anything.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I think it gets people thinking exactly like you were just saying there. It's like, well, if this was the case, yeah, would I have a pet drone if that was the thing, instead of having a, you know, a cat, because they, you know, you have to feed them and they just sleep while you're recording podcasts and lick themselves. But, and it might seem really absurd now, like, oh, as if I would have a drone, like, why would I do that? But then thinking about how our relationship with our phones these days, if you were thinking about that in the 60s, how could you actually possibly imagine that we literally, the first thing we grab in the morning most of the times and the last thing we put down at night is a phone? Or if we're going out somewhere, it's like, okay, wallet, maybe not even more anymore. It's like keys, maybe not even need that anymore either. But phone, that's what we need. And if you were, you know, if you were getting robbed, you'd hand over your wallet before your phone. In the 60s, you would never even be able to imagine what that would be. Although somebody must have, because now that's, you know, that's the reality that we have today. And whether that's positive or negative, it's the reality, and we can choose to shift and change that ourselves, which I think is a big thing about smart communities. Is like, well, this is available, but actually, what do we want to do and how do we want to use this? But going back to the art thing, I think, I don't mean to call it the art thing, your art, which I've had a look at, it's just, it makes you think about these things, and that can start conversations that you wouldn't, that, you know, people want to really have, and particularly, you know, local governments and, you know, authorities or even the private sector, or even just like people trying to understand what this means for people. Art really allows you to open up those conversations, because it's not a survey. It's not, you know, this tick and flick thing of like, oh, tell me what you think about drones. It's, you look at something or you feel something or you experience something, and you can actually be like, well, this And you don't have to have all the answers. You just, I feel like this in it when I look at this. And I think that's really, really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's this quote that's like, technology is neither good nor bad nor neither. And I think that sense of introspection of, you know, technology doesn't cause the problems we have with technology, but, you know, maybe it's about us and how we relate to each other and how we relate to the world. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of different perspectives on this, but if that's the case and the social factors determine our interaction with technology, then that means we have the power to change it, but only if we're intentional and aware of ourselves enough to do that. And I think that's why I really wanted to make this series and to prompt people to have that more introspective emotional experience of thinking about technology rather than the quite polarized finger-pointing type approach that I feel like is often depicted in the media or just in even conversations as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think if we start to have more of these conversations, but also incorporating technology into art and creative spaces and in a way that's like, you don't necessarily have to, I mean, there's so many different ways to do it, right? There's like, you know, you can depict what it might look like, but you can also use the technology itself within the artwork. Then we can have more conversations about it because, you know, art, I find, is quite a safe space. Even if you're, you know, not in the scene or whatever, you go to an art gallery and you can experience it. It's a community asset, right? And I think that's really key. And if we can start to then have some of these conversations in the art gallery, then they can start shifting into different places where maybe it's a community forum or whatever, that then the government or whoever it is, you know, community groups can actually start taking note of some of these things and go, oh, that's really interesting. And that's what the community feels about this.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I guess on that note of what art galleries are like they should be loud places. They should be places where people are able to have these bold discussions. And I guess it's been a few years since we've been able to really go into art galleries here in Australia, but there's kind of this culture of you don't raise your voice above, you know, a really certain level, and you have to kind of walk around really slowly and stare at each thing for a certain amount of time. And there's this weird kind of culture about it that I guess comes from that history of art being, you know, for the privileged or only, you know, certain people having access to that, I guess, comes with that association of how you act in a gallery. But I think as we've seen, like the National Gallery of Victoria, they've had a lot of really great programs in the past several years that are more, I guess, targeted to interaction and kids, and people can run around and chat, and there are workshops and, like you said, forums where people are talking about social issues. And I think that more kind of community hub for debate and discussion is really the future of galleries. And I hope to see people, I guess, having these important conversations about emotions and, you know, visions of the future and that sort of thing. I'd really like to see that grow in galleries in the future and be a place where people feel really welcome to imagine and discuss and reflect on themselves as well.
Yeah, I love that. And thanks for bringing that up, because even as I was saying, I mean, I go to art galleries, but it's an experience where I am quiet and I look around, depending on what it is. There's other ones where I've been to art exhibitions where it's been loud because the media, as in the whatever people are using, just trying to think what it was now, it was all very different, and some things were like, some of the artwork was really loud and some was like a TV set and some was other things and yeah, that type of thing. And you have some champagne and you eat some cheese, but it was a different experience. But yeah, you're right. I think, and as you were talking, I was thinking a lot about libraries as well and how the future of libraries and what they're going to be. And I have a lot of conversations with councils and libraries and their role in the smart space. And they have such a huge role to be the community hubs, and where people come to discuss issues, they get information, but they also can learn things, or they participate in programs or conversations or meet different people. And I think you're right about art galleries. It's like the future of those, and what do they look like in this space, will be really interesting. And again, it's not just going to happen. We're going to shape it. And I think that's one of the biggest things that like art can do, is that we can imagine what is possible because it's there, it's in front of us. And yes, it may just be a you know, maybe a painting on a wall or it may be a display, but it's there and it's possible. And we go, oh, actually, this is what we really want this to be. But then the environment around it also can change if we can start bringing more people into the conversation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting that you mentioned libraries as well, because when I finished school, I started working as a librarian at my high school, Caulfield Grammar School, and they actually won the State Innovation Award for libraries. And it was incredible seeing, you know, when you reframe what the role of libraries are as institutions of knowledge, you know, they had hundreds of kids come in at lunchtime, running around, playing on giant chessboards, doing 3D printing workshops, doing, you know, STEM classes. People came in for talks. There was like meditation rooms. And it was this like real, I guess, community hub where people would experiment and play and be imaginative. And I think that having those sort of, you know, like village centers, if you could imagine it like that a little bit, in smart communities is something that'll really help, you know, drive innovations in knowledge and community cohesion as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's like, I think about like when I went to school and, you know, I would go to the library. I was like a fake book person. I didn't read. I just looked at books, you know what I mean? Like, I actually was more a researcher. So I would write little short stories about elephants based on, you know, the encyclopedia and other facts. But my sister was the you know, would read the novels and the whatever, whereas I never got into that. But I would go there and I would play games, you know, with my friends, and I would do these other things. And the library was a place where, yeah, you would even use the computer back in the day, which I guess these days it might be a bit different. But talking to councils about libraries, it's like, they can be if we keep reframing it, and like you said, it's reframing what that library actually is for that community, but then also what it is for the council that it belongs to as well. It's not a separate service. It's actually, well, how can we integrate it in with the different services that council offers and be a data source, or be a source of innovation for ideas for new technology that the community could use, or whatever the case may be. And I think it has to be part of this smart community conversation and moving forward. And I think, you know, art galleries kind of fits into that similar category of like, you know, they're everywhere, right? And so what will they look like in the future if we start reshaping now how we talk about them and what we use them for and the narrative that goes behind it? I think that's really important.
I agree. Yeah.
Okay, just looking out of time. Oh my gosh, it's flown. Okay, well, let's zoom to the future now, which is a space that you love to be, and I do as well. It's very presumptuous of me. I assume you enjoy being in the future, being a futurist. Okay, what are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough?
I guess, you know, thinking about, well, there's the trends of what people are doing and there's the trends of what people want, I guess, and they're both a bit different. But I guess there is quite a bit of buzz around, you know, what's a post-COVID world going to look like and chatter about that. But I guess, yeah, in terms of bringing some imagination back into that, like not necessarily returning to how things exactly were, I think there's this really widespread feeling of people, they need different things from their communities and their cities and their neighborhoods. And I think that sense of creativity and in what that might look like and how that can be more creative and inclusive is something that, I mean, there's a seed of it, but I think that, as you mentioned with, you know, smart precincts or smart community hubs, I think that's a really important space that I hope will, that an emerging conversation will really come up around.
Yeah, and I think it's already happening. You know, the projects and things that I've been working on in the consulting sense, it's like traditional project, you know, exhibit A, traditional project, and then actually we do the traditional things, but then what's the smart element of that? And I don't mean just technology or the layer of technology, but this is no longer just a precinct. We want, and not necessarily an innovation precinct or a smart precinct or whatever, but what are the elements that we actually need to make sure that we are moving somewhere different and better and higher quality of life and all those type of things? even though we planned this project 5 years ago when this wasn't something we necessarily thought about or talked about, now what are the things that we need to do to make sure that we don't miss out on these opportunities to do that? And in the traditional transport project space, but also in the precinct space as well, it's definitely a conversation I've been having a lot of. And also making sure that we do bring in the creative side into those conversations. It's not a list of technology. It's not like, oh, here's a shopping list. These are the things you need to make it smart. It's thinking about, well, what's the community that's currently there? Will that be the same community there in the future? Or will it be a mix of new people, maybe, you know, the same people, but now a different mix of people coming in as well? What are some of the problems they have now? Will they be the same in the future, or will they morph and change? And some of these questions you don't know all the answers to, but it's actually about starting those conversations. And I think the creative space and art and those type of things are really great ways to start having those conversations and being even like little test beds for the sentiment of the community as well, like having pop-up displays that are, you know, collecting data on how many people are walking past or whatever, and not in a, you know, tracking people kind of way, but just knowing that people are stopping and dwelling and looking at something, or even that maybe they interact with the artwork in some kind of tech way, and bringing up different conversations about privacy and all those type of things. So then we can start having those conversations and start to trickle out within the community. So it's not necessarily just something that, you know, professionals speak about behind closed doors, but actually we start having conversations throughout the community as well.
Yeah, and I think that squishiness we were talking about as well is, I guess, coming through in projects through human-centered design teams and design thinking methods. And like you were saying, that element of question generation as well, you know, even in transport or infrastructure projects, asking those almost absurd questions of, you know, not just how do people get from A to B, but do people want to know their neighbours? Do people feel happy? Do people have a sense of pride in their community and who they are and where they're from? And how can we tap into that and actually make this project a positive source of change in the community and solve the human problems, not just the technical problems? And I guess, you know, there's always the question of whose role is it to actually do that? You know, is it a transport authority's job to do that or not? But I guess coming back to that point of collaboration, you know, working with Creative Victoria, like the Metro Tunnel project or Beyond Blue, which is kind of emerging in some projects in the construction space at the moment as well. I think those collaborations are really key, and I guess pooling resources and having that expert advice to help come up with those questions is really important in, yeah, adjusting to that emerging trend of how people want things to change. And with all the investment we have in infrastructure as well at the moment, I think it's really important to make sure that's best utilized, not just to, I guess, inject into the economy and support Australia in that sense, but to support communities and support the environment, because we've got the resources to do it. I guess it's just in terms of how we actually think in a smart way of how flow-on effects can be stimulated and who we need to help do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think leveraging major projects is something that's really key in the smart community space, and something I always try and inject into conversations. And it's that, yeah, sometimes you even see, yeah, an absurd question of, oh, that's really great that we're going to put a massive, you know, tunnel here or whatever, but how are people going to get to the train station if there's no footpaths? Because it's a micro issue, but something that makes it impossible for people if they, or you can't change behavior because, you know, we still have to drive our cars to catch this, you know, amazing new public transport or whatever it is. Actually thinking about, well, how do we, yeah, then filter that out into the community, or what is it that the community wants to be going to and from, and things that they need to be able to do that as well, I think is really key.
Yeah, I guess that point of journey mapping, you know, start to finish, and experience design, they tap into those elements. But I think hopefully that space is going to become a lot broader and really blow up and fuel a lot more smart community initiatives in the future.
Okay, well, I better let you go. It's been so great to chat with you. I really appreciate spending the time, and I look forward to following along your journey as well, and hopefully one day we'll be able to meet in person, or in 3D, I should say. We're meeting in person right now. And, yeah, maybe doing a bit of an art gallery trail or something along those lines.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
Okay, well, I just have one last question, which is how can people connect with you?
I've got my artist website at jesscoldrey.com, which is Jess, ColdrEY.com. And I've got links to all my research and media and my art portfolio up there. And you can access like my LinkedIn and contact me through there.
Excellent. Well, we will put the link in the show notes so people can click away and find you. Thanks again, Jess, for coming onto the podcast. And I look forward to talking soon.
Thanks so much for having me, Zoe.
Okay, talk soon. Bye.
Bye.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're trying to deal with disruption, not sure what technologies to buy, need to facilitate genuine collaboration, then we can help. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community/consulting.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.